As you know, we do not have any advertisements here on our podcast. Often I get asked, well, how can I give back, John? How can I help? I've got two simple asks for you. First, share the podcast with a friend, someone that you think can benefit from the information. And secondly, if you haven't already, please join the Financial Advisor Success Syndicate, something I am super proud of and would love your participation and to have you join and add value to a community with like-minded advisors. So to join, go to joinfass.com. Look forward to seeing you in there.
Welcome to the Quantum Growth Podcast, empowering financial advisors to build practices for the 21st century by providing insights and interviews on leadership, strategy, and practice management. Now here is your host, Barron's Hall of Fame advisor, Jonathan Cutton.
Welcome to another episode of Quantum Growth for Financial Advisors. It is your host, John Cutton. Hope everybody is doing well today. I've got a long-term friend, coaching client, all-around good guy who is a repeat offender. I tried to go back, and I think it was almost 2.5 or 3 years ago when I had my good friend Jared Cohen, CEO and founder of Onyx Bridge. Jared, is it Onyx Bridge Wealth Advisors? What is
Onyx Bridge Wealth Group, John.
Wealth Group. Darn it! I knew I would. I messed that up. I thought I could remember it, but I couldn't. But Jared, maybe you could just go say a quick hello to the audience and have them kind of reacquaint who you are and where you're at.
Good morning. Thanks, John, for having me. And it's hard to believe we've been friends and you've been my business mentor for probably close to 20 years at this point. But I started my career with Ameriprise back in 2001 and built a fairly successful practice under your tutelage. Decided in 2020 to step outside of the box and outside of the comfort zone. And we created Onyx Bridge Wealth Group, which is an RIA, which we founded, have been working on growing the business since and look forward to sharing kind of where we're at today.
Yeah. So full fair disclosure, good disclosure, Jared's one of my favorite people to coach because he's a very good executor. If you don't mind sharing, I know when you went fully independent to an RIA back in 2020, where were you at? Your amazing growth story, roughly in AUM and revenue, roughly.
Yeah, so we were a team of 9 people when we left Ameriprise. That was 5 advisors, which includes myself, 4 staff members. And we had roughly $275 million or so, close to $300 million under management when all was transferred over. Very similar book to what we had at Ameriprise. We have, we utilize TD and Schwab as our custodian. We have a friendly broker dealer for all of our variable business. So again, very, very similar book from where we started, but ultimately has grown pretty significantly since then.
Can you tell us what that means? So significantly since then, so about 300 million or so, 9-ish people in 2020. What could you share about kind of where you guys are at today?
So now we're a team of 25 and we are just shy of 800 million.
Wow. Okay. So you're talking about almost 2 doubles, a double, what would that be? Can't do the math, maybe 180% growth in my head, somewhere along those lines, 170, 180% growth. Over roughly 3-ish years, is that right?
Yep. And the cool part about that is it really hasn't been attributed to market value or market appreciation, right? Because the market's been really flat over that time. So it's a good indicator of just the organic growth that we've had.
Yeah, no, well said. I was going to add the same thing. It wasn't exactly the greatest time to have the markets were certainly not our friends over the last few years. When you look at it as we record this on what is today, August 7th, 8th, 9th, somewhere along those lines. I don't even know what day it is. Somewhere in August. And this might come out a little bit later in September or so. But with that being said, you know, what we wanted to really dig in on today, I think you are a great case study of someone who went from a sole proprietorship, someone that had a yearning to ultimately go from being a solo practitioner with a team behind you, but to more of an ensemble practice, who's really embraced that CEO mentality, and ultimately made the really difficult decision to focus. And I know it was a hard one that I helped you through as your coach, to focus from going from the main advisor, I'll say, in the organization, who work with a lot of the most significant clients, to ultimately transitioning to more of a CEO, working with a more limited client base, and spending more of your time working on the business and less time working in the business. So what I wanted to focus on is how you did it, right? So I want to, if it's okay, one of the things that I think our listeners struggle a lot with, and a lot of the people that I coach struggle a lot with, is kind of giving up that control, right? Their identity for so many years when they built the business was working with clients. And that's what we did. We sat in 10 or 15 or 20 client meetings a week, and we gave advice and we built relationships and we were good at it. And we talk a lot about on this show that ultimately, you know, you could build a really nice business. I mean, you did better than most, honestly, to get to $300 million as the main producer, let's say. I know you have some other advisors on your team even back then as well. But what did it for you would be my question, because you were very reticent to make that change. It took a little while to win you over. You finally made it. So one is, why did you make it? And then two, maybe you could tell us a little bit about kind of how you did it and what that journey was like.
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's good. The answer is going to be different for everyone. For me, it was just learning and having a better understanding of knowing exactly what I wanted to do for the rest of my career. You know, for the last 20 years, I've been that advisor and I've been that relationship manager and I've been in all the client meetings and making all the trades and doing all that. And I just realized that that's not where I thought my maximum potential was being reached. If I wanted to be able to build something a little bit bigger, I needed to step out and do some different things. So that was the aha moment for me, where I realized I need to start stepping away from client relationships so I could have the more time, energy, and capacity to focus on building the business. But the hard part was, okay, well, now that I want to do that and I know I want to do that, how do I do it? And it was simply a matter of finding the right advisor to do it with and figuring out the process to do that with, where it wouldn't jeopardize the client relationship. I wouldn't feel like I was just passing someone off, because ultimately that wouldn't work for anybody. It wouldn't work for myself. It wouldn't work for the client. It wouldn't work for the business. So, you know, as we mentioned, we have a fairly large team, but it took me a while to find the advisor that I thought would be the right person for that particular role, and also for us to be able to work together and understand what each of our new roles would be. So, you know, David Ringler is the advisor that we've partnered together, and we've been able to conduct a lot of meetings together over the last year and a half, and really almost a 2-year process. He joined my firm just about 2 years ago. And, you know, the first year was simply a matter of doing meetings together and me conducting 95% of the meeting, him giving a brief introduction of who he is and why he's on this call. And we prefaced it as essentially saying, he's just an extension of myself. You're getting two for the price of one, kind of thing. And you know, that was that. And, you know, clients really didn't bat an eye that there was another person on our team on their, on the call with them and as part of their wealth management team. And, you know, as time went on during the next meeting, he would give a little 10-minute market update and I would do the majority of the presentation. And then the third meeting, it would be 50-50. And right now it's pretty much, I'm just sitting there like a frog on a log, not doing much of anything. Just kind of being there so the clients don't feel that they've been completely passed off, but they don't need me there anymore. That's kind of where we've gotten. And the goal is probably by the end of this year, I'm no longer in any client, well, I should say, you know, the majority of client meetings. I'll probably still maintain, you know, 50 or so relationships, just as close family members, friends, whoever it might be, or some clients that just would not transition, because not every client, just because it's your plan, it's not sometimes not their plan, and you have to respect that. Have to make a business decision to say, all right, well, do I want to lose the client or do I want to accommodate them? So that's where we are at this point. But it was a very long process. And, you know, thankfully, it's working really, really well. We have clients that just, you know, call him and don't call me. And he's doing some meetings and some conversations on his own. So the plan is working, which is great.
Yeah, no, super well said. And you just kind of gave a textbook step-by-step process the way we try to teach it and the way we've done it in the past as well. So what were the things in David that you found to be important, right? So as you think about, one of the things I hear a lot is it's hard to find someone to, obviously, if you're the founder of the business and you've built these relationships, we all have a little ego. And we think sometimes that no one's going to be as good as us or be able to deliver even close to the experience. Was there something in particular that you were looking for in David? Was it his experience? Was it capacity? Like what were some of the attributes that you wanted to make sure that your kind of successor had?
Yeah, I mean, it has to be a lot of different things. Ultimately, first of all, it has to be a great replacement for you, for the client, right? In terms of personality, in terms of follow-up and organization and skill set and being able to present and being well-spoken and polished and have the confidence. So it's a lot of personality in terms of, who would most closely mimic, what I've done and what clients are used to from working with me over the last 15 or 20 years. Which isn't always easy to find. And sometimes it takes a long time to find that right person. And then it has to come down to understanding the roles of what our partnership is and how we work together. And, David came to Onyx Bridge Wealth Group with his own group of clients. And, I needed to feel that he's not just going to only focus on his clients. He's going to make sure he provides, our new group of clients a lot of time and energy as well. So it was a matter of us being able to agree on the right business relationship for us as well. So it's kind of the client-facing experience and also the back-facing experience, and it all has to align together. And fortunately, we were able to make that work.
So great point. And I'll hit you with two questions. The first is, when you recruited David to your team, did you think he was going to be that person? I mean, was that part of the plan? Was that he would ultimately be the right person to take on your clients? That's the first half of the question. And then the second half of the question is, you don't have to go into the detail of compensation, go as deep as you'd like, but I like that you pointed out that the way this was structured was that, David now runs, right, a kind of group of clients, which is a combination of your clients and his clients, but now I think they're both of your clients together, and that he's compensated similarly or the same, whether it be a legacy client of his or whether it be a client of yours, that he's now taking on the lead advisor role. Yep. So again, two-part question. If you could hit both of those with whatever detail you're willing to, that would be probably very helpful.
Yeah, great questions. And the first part was, that was the hope. The hope was he was coming on board to be that person. But much like, dating someone or moving in with someone, you really never know how it's going to go until you're really kind of in bed with them, right? So, David joined our team. He transitioned his client book over, was getting used to our culture and our way of doing things. He actually came from a couple of other firms since, so his experience was a little different. So first we had to, use the word onyxize him and get him used to how we run our business. He had to buy into our way of running business, our support staff, and he did. And then ultimately, once his transition was successful, then we slowly migrated into kind of introducing him to our client meetings and all that. So, and as you spend more time together, and as I was able to sit back and watch him interact with the clients, I knew it would work, right? Because I was, first of all, getting emails from clients, hey, David's great, good hire, whatever it might be. He was learning, I was helping him present, and he was very open to criticism, constructive criticism. And again, he's spent a lot of time and energy to really learn from me and check his ego at the door as well, and not think, I have 15 years of experience also, my way is the right way to do things, and that's how I'm going to treat these clients. He knew that these clients were used to a certain style and did his best to try to mimic that, which is again why it worked very well. So yes, he was brought here with that hope. But until you start to really go through it, you really never know how it's going to end up. But so that was the first question. And the second part of that is, as I said before, I didn't want to feel that he was more economically driven to focus on one client versus another. So for example, if two clients called and said, I need a meeting at 5 o'clock at night, is he going to shove off my client for his because he was potentially getting a higher payout or whatever it might have been? So we knew that the only way that this would work after time, and we didn't do this right away, but after the first, I'd say, year, we knew it was working. So we decided to kind of group all of our clients together under a team ID. And, you know, whatever revenue he had, whatever revenue I had, we kind of molded the pot together. And we said, listen, this is now a group of clients. Here's your percentage of it. Here's my percentage of it. And that's how we're going to structure, you know, kind of our little business of clients that way. So that works not only for his existing and my existing clients, but we also do that for all new clients as well. So we sat with a prospect last night, you know, roughly $1 million or so, even though it was my relationship. Yeah, I'm giving a percentage of that revenue away now because David's going to be handling the relationship. And it works for him knowing that, okay, this is now a $1 million client that, you know, I'm only making a smaller percentage on, but it really never would have been my client if it wasn't for myself.
Exactly.
So we each, as I said before, we know our roles within our partnership, and you know, we don't have any egos. We work well. Will we have to assess the payouts and percentages at some point? I'm sure. But you know, we're both reasonable people. We both know the value that we bring to the table, and I'm sure we'll work through that, just as any, you know, advisor will have to do from time to time.
Yeah, super well said. And you know, a couple of interesting points that I'll share. I help both David and Jerry. And by the way, David's an amazing advisor, amazing person, great guy, and was a great find for Jared for sure. And I think they were great finds for each other. You know, one or two points that I would want to make is one, what's really cool about the way we were able to structure this one is David did bring a book of business over, right, which created a profit center for Jared's firm. And then by molding the business together, although there was a level of incremental cost to Jared to give up some revenue with his clients, by putting the two kind of client bases together, when you look at the economics, what's really cool is David got to make significantly more money than he would have otherwise, and Jared got to spend significantly less money than he would have otherwise to get someone at David's caliber, right? And they both got what they wanted in that David was looking to get busier. He had capacity to serve more clients. He was a really good, competent advisor. But like a lot of advisors, his strong suit wasn't necessarily bringing in new clients. He's good at it, but not amazing, right? And what Jared was looking to do, he's actually really good, which is how he built a $300 million business initially, right, at growing his business by being a great advisor. But he got so busy being a great advisor and serving clients that he wasn't able to any longer spend as much time on the business development side, both organically and maybe more importantly, inorganically, right? And now that they've got this partnership, they both can do what they like to do best and what their unique value is, which will help them both grow exponentially quicker because Jared could spend time working on the business. David could spend more time working in the business, and they've got each other in a partnership. And I know we won't go deep into this, but for our listeners who've heard us talk about Angie Herber's diamond model and kind of you know, how to structure teams of advisors, a big part of the plan for David is how do we continue to grow his business jointly with Jared, by adding additional advisors over time to his team as they continue to scale the business both organically and inorganically. So I think the way that this was all structured was really cool. And ultimately, at the end of the day, it's about creating a value proposition, right, for your David as an advisor, if you're looking to do something like this, so that she or he ultimately has a clear career path that's fair, that's equitable, that isn't about just, you know, kind of today's economics, but about how to win together going forward. So the other question I wanted to ask, Jared, and then I'm going to kind of move on to kind of what's next, like, why did you do this? But one of the questions we get a lot from advisors who are thinking about transitioning some of their client base to another advisor is, how did you protect yourself, right? So now you're transitioning your relationships, right, to David. And, you know, in 3 years, if David walks up on the wrong side of the bed and you're not meeting with these clients anymore, and he decides he wants to compete for the clients, I assume you guys put something in place and there's some kind of agreement that protects, but maybe you could just talk to the audience a little bit about directionally how you thought about that.
Yeah. And again, I think that has a lot to do with choosing the right person, right? I mean, as I said, I've known David for a long time. We've been friends before this business relationship. So I think we're in a good spot. And, you know, of course, we have the legal agreements and all that fun stuff as well. But listen, truth be told, at the end of the day, clients have an opportunity to work with whoever they want to work with. And right now, again, I'm still in the meeting, so I'm still in the picture. 5 years from now, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Smith might forget I even exist and have no idea who I am. And if our partnership dissolves, I mean, ultimately, who knows, right? You know, you have the legal agreements and you hope you get to a point where it's not gonna be an issue. And I also am a firm believer, if you treat people well enough, there's no motivation or incentive for them to go anywhere, right? Most of my team and advisors make more money at Onyx Bridge than they would anywhere else. I also think they're supported more here than anywhere else. We've been very fortunate to grow a team and really haven't had any advisors leave, which is rare. And, you know, just like I've gotten invitations and offers all the time to go to various firms and Raymond James and Wells and chase a big check and all that fun stuff, no doubt they have as well. But there's a reason that not only have they not left me, but they also followed me when we decided to leave. And I think that's because of the culture we have, the support that we have, the economics we have in place. And, you know, I always say, it sounds corny, but they're my family and I treat them like family and I treat them well. And if you do that, I don't think there's going to be a dissolution. So, you know, maybe I'm naive, maybe I'm wishful thinking, maybe I'm just putting my head under the sand, but I just think if we have the documents in place and you invest in the right people and you have the right process and you have the right economics and treat everyone fairly, you know, that's how I protect myself. It's not about a legal document. It's about doing the right thing for my people.
Yeah, 100% do the right thing and people stay. With that being said, having the right legal document in place is important as well. And I know I kind of helped Jared through that process as well, getting him to the right people to actually document. I think you might have used Succession Resource Group, who's been on the podcast before, to actually document. David Grau Jr. and his team, who are amazing. But, you know, one of the things, you know, that I would share, and this isn't legal advice and I'm not an attorney or anything along those lines, but, you know, as an advisor, I'll call it quote unquote excuses or rationales as to why advisors never take the plunge. And I could tell the audience now, and Jared, you may or may not remember this, but one of Jared's biggest concerns when we were thinking about finding an advisor to ultimately free up some of Jared's time, well, what would happen if they stole my clients, right? That was one of his biggest concerns. Now, it wasn't about David, because you had a relationship and you found someone that you trusted, but it's something that stands in the way a lot of advisors taking that plunge, so to speak, but making sure you have a non-competition, a non-solicitation, liquidated, agreed upon damages, because like Jared said, right, if a advisor does leave, the client generally has the ability to do what they want, right? You can't necessarily always be able to enforce the ability to keep someone from working with them. It's a free world. And if a client wants to work with an advisor, it's that client's choice as to who they could work with. But you can agree with that advisor beforehand that, you know, on this particular set of clients, if that client were to choose you, that it's fine that you work with them, you can accept them as a client, but there's a cost to do that and it needs to be reasonable, et cetera. And then for those of you who might be at broker dealers that are part of broker protocol, right? You want to think through the rules of broker protocol, et cetera. So again, no legal advice there, not an attorney, don't play one on TV, nor is Jared, but make sure you find one and get the right advice as you think about it. Because again, we're trusting, and if you treat people well, all that stuff is completely true. But sometimes things don't go as planned. And for both parties, right, you should have a clear kind of set of rules and agreement up front that if things don't go the way that you planned for them to, that you've got documentation. I know you did a good job of doing that. And I just want to impress the importance of that to the audience. So with that being said, Jared, anything before we move on to what's next, anything that you were surprised with as you went through the process? Was it harder? Was it easier? Did it go better? Did it go worse? Any client kind of feedback? Like what's your overall take on all that?
I mean, you're not going to please everyone, right? So are there clients that kind of gave a little pushback and said, no, I only want to work and only want to speak with Jared? Of course. And listen, I think that's a compliment, a testament to the relationship we've had. But you know, for 95% of the clients, it's simply a matter of just going through the process. Looking back, I think it was a great thing. I don't think it's coincidental that I've had what's called 180 whatever percent growth over the 2 years, which is the exact same amount of time that we've been doing this. You know, it took me 20 years to get to 300 million and, you know, 3 years later to get to nearly 8. I think that's because you're stepping outside of what you're typically used to doing and focusing on other activities, which is really cool.
So let's think about those activities. And what's really cool is for the last 2.5 years or 2 years, you have still had your foot in the client pot as well, meaning so you haven't been fully not distracted and had all your time to work on the business. And we're just getting to that point, probably over the next 6 to 12 months, where even more and more and more your time will get freed up as your clients get more and more comfortable forgetting that you existed, as you said before, which, by the way, happened to me as well. And you know what? That's the goal, is right, to leave them in better hands than yours, right? By having someone like David on your team who could take amazing care of them. But so as you think about the future, right, and you think about why you went through all this and the time, energy, process that you kind of just described. So where is it that you're trying to take Onyx Bridge next?
Great question, because it changes every day. I'll say my role, my next step is to focus on leadership. Right. So a lot of my time right now, aside from client meetings, is also focused on building a team, building staff, building culture, helping advisors, supporting advisors. And that takes time. And that comes with conflicts and issues and things are always coming up, putting out lots of fires. Right. So now that I have the time, I could focus and train and develop advisors to be better leaders. I could train my existing staff members to be leaders and ultimately hire other people under them and really start to build a firm, right? As opposed to a practice, which is maybe what I would say I have now, but to really grow it from a practice to a firm and an enterprise. That's the goal. And that's going to look very, very different. It's going to be much different in terms of how many people we have, how many advisors we have, the size of our assets under management, the different locations, where we want to be. So that's probably the goal, is over the next couple of years to get to a billion, which is always a nice milestone to get to. But once we get to a billion, how do I get to 2 billion? How do I get to 5 billion? How do I get to 10 billion? And I think that's really the goal over the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, love it. And, you know, one of the things that, like I had said when we started the podcast, that I like, Jared, about coaching you is that you're a quick study, meaning you kind of pick up concepts quickly and you're like, got it. And then you're pretty good at executing, not pretty good. You're actually really good at executing. So, you know, to our listeners, we talk a lot on the podcast, or I have a lot lately, of this kind of like 0 to 1 million, right? Grit and hard work and sales ability, that 2 million to usually 3, maybe 4, maybe sometimes even 5 million in revenue, depending on where you are, is around having a process, right? That is repeatable, that is, you know, provides an amazing client experience, and that the thing that you do, in Jared's case, it's delivering financial planning and asset management and the full scope of services, that you do that well enough that your business organically grows. You retain your clients, they refer more clients to you, and you continue to grow and scale the business. What's really cool about where we are in you know, the lifestyle of Jared's business, and as I coach him, is they have a great client experience. They've got similar ways of delivering it throughout all of their advisors, and their business organically grows really, really well. So now you've got that third phase of business growth. And as you know, it's kind of like all lining up the way we've been planning it for the last 2 or 3 years, which is now, you know, Jared's got his time. He's got a $800-ish million strong business with strong cash flow and the ability to make the right investments and the right people and the right technology and all that in the business. He's got a differentiated client experience that shows that the client will kind of be delighted and continue to stay with the firm and do repeat business and introduce friends and family. And now it's about that third phase, right, of scaling a business. And there's always three ways to scale a business, right? It's capital, it's technology, and it's people, right? And people, as Jared was talking about, takes leadership. So I know one of the things, Jared, that you're now looking to do is to continue to attract advisors to your ecosystem that could be part of the culture that you can kind of help get that second phase of growth right so that their business is organically growing, and then to be able to invest in their businesses as we start to help you build CPA partnerships, continue to do M&A, which you've been, you know, historically quite good at already, and use marketing and social media and digital marketing, et cetera, as a mechanism to continue to bring clients in. So I know that was a lot, but anything that you would share on kind of like where you see an advisor in your ecosystem, how you think you could help an advisor get to that next level and kind of grow quicker with you than most?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many moving parts, and it's simply a matter of you have to offer, or you know, your firm has to offer something better than where they currently are. And that better could be one thing. It could be money. It could be support. It could be, you know, having access to be able to serve more clients, whatever it might be. So what we're looking to do is to create those opportunities to listen to a potential advisor that's maybe not 100% happy with where they are, whether they're unhappy with their grid, maybe they're unhappy with their compliance restrictions of their firm, maybe they're unhappy with the investment platforms and want to be able to offer more, but they can't. Maybe they're getting no support, maybe they're out on their own, whatever it might be. I'm trying to structure OnyxBridge Wealth Group to be able to check all those boxes with whatever their pain points might be. Well, we're the solution for that. And I think it starts with staff. I'm a strong believer that a firm is only as good as a staff member. When clients come into our office or call on the phone, the first person that they speak to has to be a very friendly, warm, knowledgeable voice. And we have that. Their overall experience, we talked about client experience before. We've changed our support model from, you know, one assistant per advisor that kind of does everything to almost different departments. We have a new client onboarding specialist. So this specialist, her name is Ann, she opens up all new accounts. She handles all ACAT. She walks the client through their online portal. She gets them set up. She makes sure that they're receiving their statements, or if they have electronic statements, they know how to access it, whatever it might be. It's a white glove experience. And we've actually had, oh my God, Ann, you're wonderful. This is so great. My friend can't get in touch with her advisor, whatever it might be. And we've gotten referrals because of that. We have Susie that handles all of our advisor transitions. That's what she's done throughout her career. And she works with advisors to make sure they get their books over, and it's a very successful transition. So we've kind of departmentalized our staff model to work on the life cycle of the client. And that makes the advisor's job a lot easier as well, because the clients ultimately feel that they have a real team behind their advisor, which has been great. That's one of the things that I think is really, really helpful. And ultimately, you know, when it comes to economics, like I said before, when you treat your people well and you give them a reason to join you. And do I have the best profit margins? This is probably a little look behind the curtain and probably some of my weaknesses. Probably not. And I'm probably overpaying some people, but we're also winning. And I think for now, that's okay. Can I potentially get a practice for a little bit cheaper? Maybe. I think at the end of the day, when you're being fair and reasonable with people and you win the business, that's where that growth comes from. And I think ultimately the business is better as a result of it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I've seen with you is maybe an overfairness in pricing with advisors, which is nice. But what's a nice thing is I know you're a believer in attracting the right people to your organization, and you're a believer that you could then help them grow, and kind of 1 + 1 = 3, and you all share in the benefits together. So one of the things that I've seen in the advisors that have joined your team is one, you could be very flexible in how you kind of structure deals and structure compensation, et cetera. Two, I know you look to feed the advisors in your organization clients and acquisition opportunities and some of that stuff when the opportunity presents itself. And then lastly, you do have an amazing staff, right? And I like that you kind of help the advisors if they choose to, and they don't all have to choose to, but to be able to give them kind of a seamless experience on the back office stuff of the business. And because you've got people who've been with you so long, those units are very scalable as the business continues to ultimately grow. So, with that being said, I think it is a very differentiated value proposition. And as we continue to work together, I know kind of doubling down on the inorganic stuff and how to bring more clients into the firm, both through acquisitions, mergers, and then through CPA partnerships and other kind of marketing strategies. Part of the plan is to actually deliver clients to the advisors in your organization in a seamless way as well. So my last question for you is, I know, and I don't actually know how you're going to answer this one, but I know we've been talking about kind of building your brand more nationally and starting to expand your geography. I know you're headquartered I call it upstate New York. What would you call it? Westchester, New York, I guess.
We're about 30 minutes outside of the city, but if that's upstate, so be it.
It's upstate for me, at least. With that being said, maybe you talk a little bit about kind of your plans to expand geographically, if there are any, and then I'll just kind of throw you a softball. Anything I should have asked you that I didn't, and how people can find you, and then we'll kind of wrap things up.
Yeah, I think, again, nationally, well, one of the things that I think we've all learned, over the last 3 years, especially during COVID, is we could do this anywhere in the world, frankly. Everything is Zoom now and virtual, and the relationships of face-to-face meetings, while we still have them, it's changed. And I think the majority of our clients, they're busy. They're busy professionals. They have families. They have kids. They have sports at night. They have busy jobs. They don't necessarily want to come in, five times a year for, and a half hour with traffic and have an hour meeting and a half hour home. They're busy. So, these 30-minute Zoom meetings work very, very well. And as an advisor, we can do these meetings anywhere in the world. So that's the first thing, is technology has helped us be able to expand and be anywhere. And also, when you look at the business, I don't necessarily have to have physical office space wherever it might be. We've been very successful bringing advisors in other states. We have advisors in Pennsylvania. We have one in Utah now. We have one in Florida. We have staff members in Texas and in California. So we're really across all over the country as it stands right now, but we still only have one office. So, working remotely, using technology, I think is very, very helpful. Now, personally, living in New York has been great, been very fortunate and blessed to raise a family here. But, as I get older, winters are not as friendly to me as they used to be. I can no longer ski because my knees and back are shot. So I wouldn't mind some warmer weather. So at some point I can envision myself and my wife moving somewhere during the winter, but having that opportunity to, kind of have these other footprint or satellite offices at some point is very, very exciting.
Yep. Love it. I had a feeling that's what you would say as well. So Jared, anything else that I should have asked you that I didn't?
I don't think so. Look forward to coming back again in another year or two once we cross the few billion threshold.
I'll tell you what, you hit a billion, you're back on. How about that? At a billion, and then we go $1 billion increments from there. I'll have you a billion, actually a doubling. We'll go a billion, 2 billion, 4, 8, 16, et cetera. And maybe a little in between.
Sounds like
So Jared, where do our listeners find you if they wanted to either pick your brain about kind of how you went through that transition? Which I think that's what I'm hoping the listeners learn from today. Hopefully, Jared's a great case study to go back where we started, of somebody who was able to, again, we're still in it a little bit, but in a very, very high quality way, be able to transition a client base. You said it really well, 18 months, 2 years, right? Just getting to the tail end of it really successfully and get what he wants for himself. And I'm really excited to now see the next phase with you having that time to actually scale and get to that next level. So where do our listeners find you, Jared, if they want to learn from you or learn a little bit more about OnyxBridge?
I appreciate that, John. Again, all of my contact information is on our website, onyxbridge.com. You know, one of the things that I've always been, you know, grateful for is the opportunity to speak with other advisors. I've had the privilege to be able to work with you, John, over the years, but there've been a lot of advisors that I've had conversations with, thinking about business, how to structure it, where to be, where to hang your shingle. And so I'm always, always open and love having conversation with other advisors, just to, you know, bounce ideas and brainstorm. And frankly, while I'm helping someone else, they wind up helping me as well. So if any of your listeners are open to having a conversation or have questions for myself or how we've done things, I certainly welcome anyone and everyone to reach out, shoot me an email, give me a call. But all of our information is on our website, onyxbridge.com.
Love it. Fantastic. Well, hey, as always, thank you for joining. Amazing growth in your business, a few hundred million to almost 800 million is amazing. So congrats on that success. And with that being said, we will put a link to how to contact you on our show notes as well. And to our listeners, thanks for joining another episode of Quantum Growth for Financial Advisors. If you yourself or anyone you know could be a good, interesting guest, don't keep us a secret. Shoot us a note and we'll see if we can get you or that special someone on. So make it a great day and thank you for listening. As you know, we do not have any advertisements here on our podcast. Often I get asked, well, how can I give back, John? How can I help? I've got two simple asks for you. First, share the podcast with a friend, someone that you think can benefit from the information. And secondly, if you haven't already, please join the Financial Advisor Success Syndicate, something I am super proud of and would love your participation and to have you join and add value to a community with like-minded advisors. So to join, go to joinfass.com. Look forward to seeing you in there.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. You can find the episode show notes and subscribe for updates by visiting cuttonconsultinggroup.com/podcast. Make sure to subscribe and download the episodes on your favorite podcast app, and we'll see you next week.